So you sent me and Vera a message the other day, and it just said, the wheels on these things. It was never a fair curling fight. The wheels on what things, Scott?
Because you do this competition in airports where we have to hurl our suitcases down the flat surfaces.
It's called airport curling.
I have a new suitcase that might have good wheels on it.
Oh, you got a new suitcase?
I did.
Where'd you get it from?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Huh. Does it happen to be an away suitcase?
Would that be the away that you said was great and you told this very long story about how it's really well designed and replaced and I said it was rubbish, it was all a brand, that they didn't have a great product, that away?
That's the away that I'm thinking of, but you wouldn't have possibly bought one of those.
Maybe. Yeah, right, I got one and it's great.
I'm Ace Callwood.
And I'm tired.
And this is Envoy Recorded Radio. Oh, we're back. We're back in our favorite corner of the world.
We're in a Courtyard Marriott on the outskirts of Colombia. But I don't care about that because Mandy was just at drinks with us. And she subscribed to Envoy Recorded Radio in front of us
in real time. Yeah.
And maybe the highlight of my life.
Although we did have an extended debate about recorded radio versus podcasts. And she was adamant that she had downloaded this episode, well, the previous episode, actually 24 hours in a Waffle House episode, the second one we ever recorded. She said she downloaded it to her podcast app. So it must be a podcast. I vehemently disagreed. And here we are in South Carolina, in a Courtyard Marriott.
So this edition is not sponsored by the state of South Carolina. Who's our involuntary sponsor of the week?
Aaron Fagan at Paste and Rind Cheese. Do I say company or is it pronounced co? Aaron, I need you to weigh in on this, perhaps. But I don't know. You wrote Aaron down, but I ended up on Aaron's LinkedIn He's incredible on LinkedIn, maybe better than you. I'm just going to let you all figure that out, you two. But he wrote about their no tipping policy at Paste and Rind. It's a cheese shop in D.C. We got to work with Aaron at a previous company where he was for a while, and like I have come to very much enjoy Aaron. And then he opened this cheese shop with his wife, and they are crushing it in D.C. He writes about his no tipping policy. Tipping is ripe with problems, from its troubling and discriminatory ascent to popularity in Reconstruction to the risky power dynamics it enables today. It needs to go. We raised our menu prices by 15%, removed the tipping option, and will not subject our employees to uncontrollable earnings variance or challenging and potentially unsafe situations in which their objection could be punished financially. I love it. Brilliant, Aaron.
So
I realize
that you love this, but yeah. I'm going to call BS on Aaron because we know Aaron pretty well. And we knew Aaron when he was like the head of data analytics at a tech company.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love that narrative. But I think the instigating moment for this was like yours. He put in a spreadsheet and goes, this makes no sense. Do not compute. Tipping doesn't make any sense. And then he was like, oh, and it's bad too.
I like where he got. I like how he's articulated it. And
anyway, Aaron is a terrific number two at Paste and Rind Cheese Company, and his wife, the founder, is doing an amazing job. And if you're in the DC area, they have two branches now, one in the city and one at Union Market. Go spend some money on some cheese.
Brilliant.
Paste and Rind.
You have what should be a word here but doesn't have any vowels.
Well, so it is. So the second sponsor this week is the new device I'm wearing on long haul flights. It's a turtle. And it's a Scottish product. It's turtle. Do you want a Scottish turtle?
R-T-L.
Turtle, because that's how Scottish people would pronounce turtle. See, Vera's now laughing. She's very dismissive of this project.
I think she's laughing at me laughing
so,
at you.
So it is a... Imagine a scarf. Now it makes sense it was made in Scotland, because you've got to wear a scarf 12 months a year. It's like a scarf that has a plastic frame in it, and you wrap it tightly around your neck, and then you lean on it on a flight to go to sleep. It's a little creepy, but it gets great reviews. So I'll let you know that sponsor of the week might be removed next week if it doesn't work. But it's called Turtle. There it is,
it,
right there.
It actually, it looks, when you put it on, you know how dogs look when they have like their cone on their head. That's actually, and I shouldn't have told you that. I should have let you wear it in public. But, you know, maybe this, as I talk smack, is really an act of love. And there will be photos at some point of Scott wearing his turtle
we'll report
on a flight. Okay.
Next week I'll be post-turtle.
To the zeitgeist. Let's actually stay on the topic of flights. This could have lived, I suppose, in the yelling at clouds, but it's more yelling at clouds while in the clouds. The great carry-on battle begins. This is like a LinkedIn news article I saw pop up, but I've kind of heard rumblings that the airlines are figuring out the kind of last bastion of self-determination for flyers, I suppose, is whether or not we have a carry-on, and some airlines might start charging for carry-ons because, of course, flights are overbooked, they're crowded, nobody can get stuff up in the overhead, it slows down the boarding process, flights leave late, et cetera, et cetera. So that's actually not what I care about. What I want to say, as someone who spends quite a lot of his life on flights, people don't understand the rules. There are rules, I think, I don't even remember the comedian, the Australian guy who like rants about guns, you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, something Jeffries. Yeah. I forget what his name is.
Jim Jeffries.
Yeah. He says, we live in a society, there are rules, but he says it Australian-like, and I loved it. He's talking about middle seat gets the armrest, which is just a rule, right? Yeah, if you're in the middle, you get the armrest. I had a guy the other day who thought he was bigger than me. He wasn't, but it's a thing that guys do. And so, I was in the middle, and he was just like nudging my arm off. And I was like, I don't know why this is even a conversation we're having. I get the armrest. You asshole. What are you doing? So we had to have that conversation.
So what are your rules? So what are the rules of flying?
Yeah.
What are the ace rules of flying?
Okay. Your jacket,
the laws of flying.
Your jacket can go up in the overhead if it goes up last after everybody is boarded and there's room in your overhead, or if it fits on top of your carry-on and doesn't impede somebody else from putting stuff in the overhead. Right. Seem reasonable? You spend as much time on flights. So like,
when you accuse me of it, I'm just asking the question of what the rules are.
All right, that's one. Personal bags only go in the overhead if you're sitting in an exit row or a bulkhead where you can't put your personal bag under the seat. And importantly, only your big carry-on goes above. I think some people misread this rule as, if I only have one bag and it's a backpack, it can go in the overhead. No. Your backpack goes under the seat in front of you like everybody else. Don't be a dick. Roll-ons go in the overhead. Unless, and my major caveat is, none of this matters if the flight is empty. Read the room, folks. Point being, it does slow down the process if we put stupid stuff overhead. And I've seen this on my last three flights. Somebody has, I don't know what the rules are, and I guess I don't want anything by my little toes on this flight, so I'm going to put my little tiny backpack up top. And now there's somebody who can't put a full-size carry-on in the bin above the head because you've put your little backpack there because you didn't want it at your feet. And it slows everybody down. It screws everybody up. Figure your shit out, people.
So I would have said that we would have lost our audience at this point, but I'm also pretty confident, knowing who listens to us, the type of person who listens to us, this is the most popular segment, as everybody is venting with you about their frustrations about flying, because we have a very privileged audience.
But amateur
what I
hour.
Also like to point out, as you're yelling at clouds while in the clouds, is that none of this applies to you generally, because for some reason, the airlines have tagged you as a minor celebrity and you get upgrades everywhere you go. You had one flight recently where you had to travel in the middle of the seat and coach. This is related to one experience, because normally you board the plane first and there's dedicated space for you, because for some reason people think, I don't know, you're a successful actor or something. So it's just adorable that you had one bad experience, and now we're rolling out the rules. Anyway, moving on to rules and getting rid of them. The University of Florida has eliminated all DEI positions.
Yeah.
All of them. They've all gone. Yeah. Right. 13 people lost their jobs. What I'm not quite tracking with this is that do you know who the president of the University of Florida is?
I don't think I do.
It's Ben Sasse, the former senator. He was one of the he was a representative. He's one of the few representatives, Republican representatives, there were seven of them, who voted in favor of President Trump's impeachment. He's a very, his Twitter account is great. He's
always been
very
like reasonable.
Engaging. Yeah, it's just interesting. But if I were in the DEI industry, I wouldn't take seriously that Florida, the university system of Florida, is removing all DEI positions. But I would take seriously that Ben Sasse is.
That's right.
Yeah.
He was senator from Nebraska.
He was the senator. I was right.
Yeah.
From Nebraska. I said the House member from North Dakota or something. Details don't matter.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So we've defunded all the DEI programs in State College, lest they lose their state funding. And
oh, is that why? That's just a practical step. That's a legislature requiring it.
The ban is banning public colleges from using federal funds for DEI programs, activities, and policies. So the University of Florida eliminated all of their roles to comply with the policy that would allow them to keep their federal funding. So the policy that drives the economics, that drives a decision that further potentially disenfranchises or eliminates the protections and kind of balancing of some programs that drive equity.
So can I share my state bias?
Sure.
I just don't worry about anything that happens in Florida for having like learning lessons for other states. I just don't see, that people look at Florida. I think people look at Texas. I think they look at California. They look at sometimes New York, but that as much as it's one of the big four states, I don't think people model from lessons from Florida. So I would take it seriously for Floridians, but I wouldn't take it that seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, by the same time, there are 21 million people in Florida, somewhere in that ballpark, and so the policies in Florida are the same policies that we might see affecting a small European country somewhere. You know,
No, it would be the same as a small European country that had been invaded by angry old people from New Jersey. And I don't know of a small European country that's been invaded by angry old people from New Jersey.
Honestly, the angry old people from New Jersey are just like...
All right, I'm going to try to cheer you up. Staying on things failing. Can we just take a moment to say that the chief of police of New Orleans was reported in the AP wire the other day as testifying that some cases may be at risk because rats have been getting high on the drugs that have been held in evidence lockers. That the headquarters of the New Orleans police is so old and falling apart, they can't separate the rats from the evidence lockers, and they've got very high rats who are eating the marijuana. I don't know why I find that so funny.
Is
there may be miscarriages of justice because the evidence has been messed up, but in the meantime, I just have this vision of very chill rats at the New Orleans Police Department.
Ripped up, fried, stoned rats. I love it.
But moving on to more serious news, self-driving cars. Turns out you can stop them with a t-shirt.
Yeah. So I saw a video. I think I sent it to you. There's a video of a guy who is literally wearing a t-shirt that says stop.
Like with a stop sign.
It's a stop sign printed t-shirt, and he's got like a pullover over it so he can close it. But he's like, he'll pop out between cars as a Waymo car or self-driving car is coming down the street, and he'll just pop out like to the edge of the street, and the car will see him stop. And then he just kind of sprints back onto the sidewalk, and it'll keep driving.
So I'm seeing more and more friends post video from San Francisco, because I think Waymo have rights to have the self-driving taxis in San Francisco now. So I'm seeing friends post in San Francisco being like, we're in a car and it doesn't have a driver in this thing. But you and I could go there with t-shirts that have stuff.
Just slow everybody down.
All right, let's do it.
Yep.
Let's do it.
I'm done.
Hey, kids, don't jump in front of cars as a general rule unless they're self-driving and you're wearing a t-shirt that has a knockoff of a stop sign on it. Life lessons.
Oh, I love it.
All right, what else is going on in the world? Oh, woke from home, the elitist bubble. What's all that about? Oh, no, I posted this.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, the data's in. Oh, I'm not sure the world is ready for another work from home rant.
No.
Here's the summary.
Wait. If we save the work from home, can we also save the four-hour work week rant?
All right. Should we do that another
week? We'll do like a different segment.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's do a dedicated segment to the like
how we work.
Fighting about how we work.
For now, on Wojtank Radio. The F-35 is now the world's first stealth fighter certified to carry a nuke, which is wild. Wild. Why is that wild, one asks? Because stealth fighters don't carry nuclear weapons. And importantly, I think it's the B-12 or 13 that the F-35 is now rated to carry. They carry it in the bomb bay, and so it doesn't...
You don't know they're carrying it.
You don't know they're carrying it, and it doesn't interfere with the stealth aspects of the jet itself. And so it remains rated for stealth while also carrying a tactical nuke, and that is wild where technology has gotten us. Ideally as a deterrent, but as a strike option.
There will be a debate about whether it is a deterrent.
Right.
If you have the option, this goes back to threat perception, you have the option of sending a stealth jet that you do not know is nuclear armed towards the airspace of somewhere else, that the premise of deterrence sort of drops, because the idea is you see the missiles coming, you have the ability to respond or react. One might argue, let's just say if this was the Russians had this capability, we'd be having a different kind of response to it. And it would be making the headlines in a way like you had to go to Popular Mechanics to find this article.
Yeah.
And it's seen as a technical thing, but yeah. We're not talking about nukes enough. Nuclear discussion is becoming mainstream. Will we use nukes? How would we use nukes? What would they do? The things that were off the table are just creeping onto the table as it goes. In more interesting news, or better news, a friend of mine, a guy I went to...
really quickly, before you move on, because I think the way we've talked about Tank Radio is like demystifying some of the implications of the things happening in a world that we know probably too well. Importantly, a couple nations that we are allied with are adopting F-35s. And so replacing older
a lot of them.
Older air wings, the Tornadoes throughout Europe, the F-16s throughout Europe. So Turkey, for instance, is adopting F-35s. And then NATO allies, Belgium, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and of course Turkey, all getting access to the same type of tactical nukes that we're talking about the F-35 carrying. There's some retrofitting that has
to happen. They have the F-35s. They don't have the tactical
nukes. We actually, the U.S. shares about 100 tactical nukes with our NATO allies. And it's the same type with some retrofitting. So really what we're talking about is... global implications for nuclear warfare. And like, on one hand, that's scary. On the other hand, like, that's actually, it's couched as a technical thing. What we're talking about is just a shifting in power around the globe right now.
Or going back to the structures that were in there in the 1980s at the height of the Cold War, where you had US air base. Well, you still have US air bases in Europe, obviously, but they had on the front line tactical nuclear weapons. And the distinction between tactical and strategic is how much they destroy. Strategic tends to be missile-based, is sort of the assumption, and it destroys whole regions of countries. Tactical, it's the idea you can limit the effect.
Yeah, and these are just gravity bombs. Which,
yeah, with a...
Right.
Yeah. It's wild. And the Danes this week introduced conscription for women as they're ramping up the capabilities of their armed forces. And you would say, hey, it's little Denmark, but per capita, the amount of people that are required to serve. Sweden and Finland had already done it. Sweden, formerly neutral, finally acceded to NATO this week. So the whole of the Baltic Sea, other than Kaliningrad, which is sort of an outpost of Russia, is now a NATO country. And President Macron, after I criticized him last week, I still criticize the French for not contributing enough. Mm-hmm. But he is really changing the discussion about whether NATO countries should be engaged in behind the front lines, but in Ukraine, supporting the war in Ukraine. And I think what's pushing that is a lack of faith that the Americans will be providing resources.
Yeah.
And without the American weapons, the Europeans might have to provide people as well as weapons. But a huge, huge spat between Germany and France right now. And there's a conference going on just this week, tomorrow actually, I think it is, with President Macron, Chancellor Scholz, and the President Tusk of Poland.
Of Poland.
Where the Poles are trying to mediate between the two. But yeah, lots going on. I was going to talk about my mate. So, Commander Doug Robb of the U.S. Navy has written a few articles recently. It's good. It's in Defense News. Doug is typically a commander of a U.S. destroyer, but he's in academia right now. He's a fellow at Oxford University, and he's written several pieces in partnership with other people about bringing more efficiency to the Navy. But this one was about energy consumption and how you use refueling at sea, and it's pretty nerdish. But this was the stat. The Department of Defense alone consumes more energy than Sweden or Portugal. The DoD is a bigger user of energy than significant mid-sized countries in Europe. It's wild. It's incredible. But it makes sense. I've got several friends who are working on energy resilience for the DoD. DoD is a massive investor in solar, renewable energies. And when you start to understand that scale. I will point out, you know, I didn't go to graduate school with Doug in England. We went to graduate school in the United States. I think he's only writing these very brilliant articles as a result of him being in Oxford. That was my explanation, Captain Commander.
Her Majesty's ship Richmond.
Oh yeah, let's finish with this. So HMS Richmond is a Royal Navy frigate that has just been on assignment to the Red Sea as part of the coalition force. We're talking about coalition today. A coalition force in the Red Sea dealing with these Houthi drones. It was the first ship to launch a new defensive missile called the Sea Scepter. So the Ministry of Defense issued this press release that said HMS Richmond has launched these Sea Scepter missiles. It's intercepted, you know, Houthi drones. And they issued a photograph. And the photograph is like everybody's in those white combat suits that you see in the movies, and they're in the control room of this ship. But the best part of it, if you zoom in, the skipper is holding a cup of tea. Because what else would you... They're in all of their protective suits, their fire suits, basically. They're in the fire room, and they're launching these missiles for the first time. And zoom in. There he is. There's the captain with his cup of tea. We'll put that in the newsletter when it goes out.
Brilliant. Okay. Tools for tools. Have you heard the term hanging out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hang out.
Yeah. I am. Hanging out is a lost art. And I think as a tool for this week, particularly in the context of the epidemic of loneliness that you all have heard us allude to with some regularity, what do we do to spend time with people? And it's helpful to talk about the barriers first. I won't go deep, but what I will say is there are excuses for all of the things and logistics to get especially adults together to be in the same place. And it's we have to coordinate calendars, and then we coordinate calendars across spouses or partners, and then kids' calendars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all to get to a place where we're in the same place. And I would posit the art of hanging out has been lost. We are constantly trying to find a thing to do with people in order to feel connected And part of what I think we don't do well is do nothing together. Mm. And it's really hard. We schedule the dinner. We go to the movies. We pick this thing and plan that thing. And you remember as kids when you used to just go down to your friend's place and knock on the door and say, hey,
hey,
can Cindy play? And what were you going to do? It's just whatever, man.
Yeah.
It's just to sit. And, you know, I think the idea of hanging out has been relegated to stoners on couches as we sit in a hotel room on a couch and have this conversation. Like, just sitting and not having a plan and working through the discomfort of not knowing and not having some social lubricant, and not in booze or illicit substances, but the lubricant of we have a thing to distract us from, I don't know, just being in the same place together is fascinating to me. And I think as a simple tool, reaching out to somebody and not having an agenda, but just to be in the same place and see where that takes you, see what conversation arises, what you talk about, how you spend time. If we put our phones down and we're just together, what does that look like? And maybe we can build that muscle memory back to just be and not have to do to enjoy someone's company. I think it's interesting.
So a couple of thoughts. First is that Vera told me today that I couldn't use the word lubricant in client meetings, and you just used the word twice.
Yeah, but you say it worse than I do.
But on the serious point, yeah, no, I think this is a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think if you called most people and said, hey, do you want to hang out? They'd be like, yeah, no, I'm busy. Or that just feels weird. We might have to start a domino company and say, do you want to come over and play dominoes?
Yeah.
Because we've built a society now that must be doing things. I have heard of people inviting their friends to go shopping with them.
I do that. Me and Ange. I'm just like, hey, what are you doing? I got to go to Target.
Grocery shopping. But not like, not clothes shopping. Not like that. It's not
shopping. No, not we're out shopping.
Like, I'm doing mundane stuff. Will you come
Do you just want to come hang out? I mean, that's what it is. I'm doing my life together. And so can we stay here for a second? Growing up, did people lock their doors? Well, you're from the UK, so maybe
we didn't
stuff from each other.
We didn't have anything to nick. Well, everything in our house was nicked.
Yeah, well, it was nicked already. Who cares? No, but the idea, so I grew up on Navy bases, right? Yeah. Military bases. And, you know, we didn't really lock up, especially privileged in officers' housing. I get it. But, yeah, we just showed up at people's houses. You know, there were, like, the door was just kind of always open. And into later life, even as my parents retired, that was kind of the neighborhood, the suburban type of neighborhood that was safe, again, privileged. But like, you just showed up, and my mates didn't have to be home. They didn't have to be at the house. I would just be there when they showed up, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I got a snack, and like, I was just waiting. You want to hang out? And I even find now that it's you should have called. And I don't know if there's a technology element to that. Like, if you could text, why wouldn't you? You could just show up places. But when I'm running there, I stop by your house.
You
just like, show up. Like, we can hang for 5 minutes or we can hang for 3 hours and have dinner together, all of it unplanned. But like, the idea that I have to call ahead to say, hey, do you have X amount of time to do Y thing? It takes some of the spontaneity out of just being humans together.
Yeah, but I think we've passed that point. I think people need an excuse to do it. I think they desperately crave it. I know you're passionate about it as well.
Yeah.
I can feel it. Yeah. It's like we're becoming... like firstly, we're becoming isolated. Secondly, we're automatons. And thirdly, it's just so boring. Like, maybe we go to a deeper level if we just spend some time not doing something.
Yeah.
But if you tell Americans, here we go. I'm not going to go on an anti-American rant. But there are two ways for you to get Americans to meditate. One is to say, hey, just be quiet and still for a few minutes. And there's not a chance an American's going to do that. But if you say there is a new meditation bar down the street, and to go there, you've got to pay a $500 membership fee and Instagram yourself while you're going there and buy a Starbucks on the way. And there's a whole clothing line that you might buy. Americans will meditate. They will. They'll do it. And I just think that like, if you just said to Americans, hey, get together with your friends. Just stand in a fairly small square area, hop around a little bit so you're moving and chat to each other, they'll be like, that's crazy. But if you say, do you want to play pickleball and burn 3 calories, like, we're all in for it. I think we might just have to invent something that really is hanging out, but we're giving people a reason to do it. If you had awards, hanging out awards, little LinkedIn medals, something. You're onto something.
I don't know where croquet originated, but as you talk shit about Americans and pickleball, I'm almost positive croquet was you lot. And yeah, it's the same
definitely
thing.
Was. Also, let's just point out, once you play croquet, you never go back.
Fair enough. Okay. Yelling at Clouds with Scott and me. You get one thing to rant about. Pick one. Pick wisely.
It's a choice between Barbie and Princess Kate, but I'm going to go with Barbie.
No.
I'm totally fine that Barbie, the movie, didn't win a significant number of Oscars.
Okay.
Like, that was uncontrollable. There's a committee. I don't know how many men and women were on the committee. There were some great films in the lineup, like all of that. But you know what is controllable? Which shows play during the Oscars? And the producers of the Oscars went, oh, let's have something from Barbie. Let's fucking have Ken. And nobody talked about it. There was no discussion of, like, of all the performances out of Barbie that we'd choose the bloke. And everybody loved it. And I just...
Everybody did love it.
They loved it. Yeah. They loved it. And I want to shout out to the women cast members of that film. Mm-hmm. Not only have you been magnanimous in not winning the awards themselves, but the magnanimity at which you celebrated Ryan Gosling being the center of attention. Like, there are moments in life I can't take the irony.
It was just an Emperor's New Clothes moment for you. In that. I laugh, but only because what else can one do?
So we went from, the worst part was the celebration of the Kens. So not only did we have one man on stage, we had 200 of them, mm-hmm. like, there. And then Slash out of nowhere. Like, it was just... Yeah. Actually, the Slash thing, there was this weird metaphor right through my head, because I don't know if it means the same thing in American English, but to Slash means to take a pee, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you were peeing just all over the Barbie thing. We were slashing all over it. Like, oh. It was just... I don't know.
All right. There we go.
That's my rant at Clouds.
I don't think I have anything to add to this segment on the heels of that. Where can you find us next?
So I can't disclose where I'm going.
You sketchy bastard.
But I will say Princess Kate may be there.
Wait, is that where I'm going? Am I, no. Where am I going? I'm at some point going to be in London over the next 2-3 weeks. Vera's saying next week, but...
It's not next week. What,
Vera's saying not next week, but what Vera does not realize is I may or may not. I don't recall whether I asked where we're going to be next week. I just said where we're going to be next. Where am I next?
Home.
Where am I after that?
What she's saying is you need some time at home.
Okay. I'm going home. Yeah. Okay. I'm going home. You're going to an undisclosed location.
Yeah. And then I'm in New York next week. So just a heads up, Aaron, no, we're not getting together because it's another fly in and fly out. So when you listen to this podcast and you get mad that we haven't been out for a drink, I'm in and out on the same day, but that's it. So I too am hopefully home next week.
There we go. Well, I think our work here is done. From West Columbia, born and raised, I'm Ace Callwood.
Nice.
We'll see you next time. Maybe.